I have a little collage board at my desk at work, notes, newspaper tear-outs, things I want to see. And in the middle, ever since it was on the front page of the New York Times, a photo I really don't want to see but can't look away from. It's a little boy in the rubble in Gaza, his face contorted with grief and still a tenderness beyond his years as he strokes the beautiful face of his lifeless little sister. It's a gut punch. The photo was taken by New York Times stringer Summer Abu Alouf, who said the boy was crying, "Where is my mom?" And Summer cried as she took the picture. Summer is Palestinian, a Gazan. In a video made by The Times, she talks about her February photo spread, Portraits of Gaza. She says her story was about how lives changed during the bombing. Then, these people are not numbers. These people had dreams and ambitions. And she goes on to say the stories added to her own fear that her own children, her family, would die. The war, started by the brutal Hamas attack on Israelis, and now the brutal bombing campaign and ground attacks by Israel against Hamas, goes on. Today, military troops entered a hospital, they say, in search of Hamas fighters. We hope to talk to Summer soon. She and her family have been evacuated from Gaza by the New York Times. But veteran Times journalist Declan Walsh, who traveled in Gaza with Summer and wrote the text for her pictures and is now in Nairobi, is here. Declan, welcome back.
Hi there, Robin.
And also with us today, New York Times senior photo editor Mona Bushnak. She joins us from London. Mona, welcome to you as well.
Thanks for having me, Robin.
Start with Khalid Judah. He's the 9-year-old boy saying goodbye to his 8-month-old sister. Now, the Times at the time, the end of last year, reported that he'd already also said goodbye to his mother, father, older brother, and sister. They'd all been killed. Do we know how he is doing?
Khalid is in Gaza with one of his brothers, his younger brother, a 7-year-old, who also survived the attack. They were taken care of by their uncles. And his younger brother had actually wounds from the attack. And Summer ran into them weeks after she took that incredibly powerful photo that you described. She ran into them at the hospital while Khalid and his brother were there basically for treatment. And she visited them, and to our knowledge, they still remain in Gaza.
Summer, how is she doing?
It has been an incredibly difficult journey for Samar to leave the Gaza Strip. Samar is a mother at heart, and she left because she wanted her children to be safe, but her heart remained in Gaza, where the rest of her family, her parents, her sisters, one of them just gave birth 2 days ago in a tent, and another one had given birth to twins in the first week of the war, and that sister with the twins and her husband have been in North Gaza. And actually, the last I checked a few days ago, they couldn't find formula for the babies, and they were barely finding food for the family. Mm. So she wishes to return to be able to document the war and to check in on her family.
Well, Summer, in that video that The Times made, said, as you indicated, she worried she might lose her children. And Declan, she had such powerful, good reason to fear this, documenting so many children who'd lost their lives, but also documenting a fellow photojournalist, Mohammed Al-Alul. He was sitting in a car. This photo is stunning. His head is tilted back. His eyes are closed. He's cradling the body of one of his young children, one of his 4 children, all brothers, who were killed in an Israeli airstrike.
And the photograph that we're talking about, even now, I think I find it hard to look at. Mm. Mohammed, just like Summer, very typical of this core of Palestinian journalists who have really been the eyes and ears of the world. And in his case, resulted really in this excruciating loss. Here's this man who really hadn't been seeing very much of his family since the war started. He worked for a Turkish news agency. He had been away from home most of the time, covering the impact of mostly Israeli airstrikes. And then one day, according to the reporting we had, really his worst fears came through when he got a call from some of his colleagues who said, an airstrike has struck what we think is your home. And then there was just this chaotic sequence of events, which resulted in him finding that 4 of his own 5 children had been killed. One of the other photographs that we have shows him standing, holding his last surviving child, a one-year-old boy called Adam. Mm. And since then, like Summer, Mohammed has been evacuated by his employer. He's currently, I believe, in Turkey, where his wife, who was very seriously injured in the same strike, is now receiving medical treatment.
I wonder, Declan, I mean, you have been in so many war zones. You were in Gaza. You befriend these people, and then you leave. Look, they, I'm sure, would tell us they are desperate to get these photographs out. But is there any, do you ever feel any guilt or conflict about even asking them to do it?
The point is that in this conflict in Gaza, initially at least, they didn't really have any choice. Gaza was closed to international journalists, except on very rare occasions with the Israeli military on embeds. But for the Gazan journalists who were there, I think many of them just felt this great sense of obligation that because no other media were able to access the area, that the responsibility had fallen on them. But as we've seen in this conflict, it's not just about the great personal risks so many of them have run. And don't forget that perhaps close to 100 Palestinian journalists have died in this war. That's one of the worst death tolls of any conflict in the last number of decades. Mm. But also their own families are in the firing line. We hear with the story of Summer as well. When she was taking the photographs, not only was she having to basically act as the reporter because I was unable to get there, but also she was trying to keep her own family safe, trying to find food, medical attention, and just, of course, worrying every single day about what was going to happen to them. And as I understand it from Summer now, she is torn between, you know, her great professionalism and desire to bear witness, and of course, the need to keep her family safe.
Yeah. And Mana, as the editor who, you know, sifts through these images, how do you choose? Some would say we are seeing the faces of dead children. It's too graphic. It's intrusive. We know that opinion columnist Lydia Pogreen has said it's a moral obligation to see them. Where do you draw the line? How do you decide?
There's just so many moving photos of whether it's wounded children receiving treatment and crying in pain and agony. And, you know, what I wish I could do is to be there and hold their hand and help them. It's difficult to sift through hundreds, if not thousands, of these pictures sometimes a day. I agree personally that it is a moral obligation, but it is a line that we have to think about. There's also a difference when it's a picture that's gory or gruesome that will only make the reader turn the page or quickly scroll because it won't get the point of the war, of the pain, of the misery, the danger, the risks that people are going through. It is a decision based on discussions with photo editors and senior managers and standards.
Yeah. Of course, there were terrible images that came out of the Hamas attack on the kibbutzim in Israel. The New York Times did a special report on sexual assaults during those attacks. Editors had to sift through terrible photographs and videos that were taken by the Hamas attackers. The New York Times is standing by its reporting on that, but it's been a tough go there. And now I'm looking more at the pictures from Gaza. Here's little Mohammed, 12 years old, getting treated for burns. You know, war is horrible. These are not the first images. I'm thinking, you know, back to the image of the starving mother holding her starving child during the famine in Ethiopia. This was Stan Grossfeld's Pulitzer Prize-winning photo.
I mean, the most famous and slightly notorious famine picture is the vulture one because the photographer later committed suicide, I believe.
Yeah. Oh. This was Kevin Carter's photo of a starving girl struggling to reach a feeding station during a famine in Sudan, of vultures looking on. And given that, can you just briefly talk about the importance of the witness, the photographer?
Well, you know, part of the goal for us was to show those incredibly stark images we've been talking about. But part of the brief was also to show the stories of survival. And in fact, one of the most dramatic stories we have is about a woman who had given birth just a few hours before those October 7th attacks happened. And she told us about this dramatic journey across Gaza with her family and this newborn child in tow as there were, you know, fighter jets in the sky and passing corpses in the streets and bombs exploding, sometimes nearly killing her own family. And some of the photographs and the reporting here, we're hoping, gives a sense of how those people are getting getting through it. I think we're often drawn to the starkest and the most graphic images or the most disturbing ones. But I think it's important also to recognize that for many people, and indeed currently now for about 2 million residents of Gaza, for most people, every day is simply a kind of, you know, very frightening, difficult grind with the threat of famine. Our job as journalists in bearing witness to that is to give our readers a sense of the breadth of the suffering and of human experience in these really excruciating situations.
That's Declan Walsh, international correspondent for The New York Times. We've also been speaking with Mona Bushnak, New York Times photo editor, about some of the excruciating photos that have come out of the conflict in the Middle East and Gaza. Declan, Mona, thank you so much.
Sure, my pleasure. Thank you.
Bye-bye.